cold when master the abstract. Step back and feel the contrast. Echoes of a broken past. Before my eyes, the future flashed. Concepts, the moment past. Fear of the manifest. Waging battle on my spirit. Surrender to what's fearless. See what bodies mix of love and lust. When love was hard to touch, I toss a prayer your way. Namaste, baby, namaste.
Namaste, namaste.
Welcome to Yoga Talk, the Yoga International podcast. That was Namaste Nation by the Householders. I'm your host, Kat Hegberg. I'm the editor of Yoga International.
Hey, and I'm Michael Carlucci. I'm one of the video content producers at Yoga International.
So how are you doing today, Michael?
I'm doing great, Kat. I'm really excited. I've been at the Himalayan Institute now for a while. I've done some teacher trainings, and my primary motivation for doing the teacher training was to get out into the world and make a whole bunch of money.
Wait.
Seriously, Kat, hear me out. I'm going to be a yoga teacher, and I'm going to make so much money. I'm not even going to know where to spend it. Am I going to spend half of my year in Belize riding whales? Am I going to be like in Florence drinking spumante out of like crystal flutes?
Okay.
You know, and all the meantime teaching yoga.
Hold on a second there, Michael. That sounds lovely, but I don't know that yoga teaching is really the best get-rich-quick scheme.
You mean I can't learn how to funnel all that golden-colored ghee out of the clouds hovering around Mount Olympus into money?
I wouldn't depend on that. Well, let me just read you this little excerpt. This is an excerpt from an article on MSNBC this past July by Ned Resnikoff, and it's called Yoga Teachers, Overstretched and Underpaid. He says that the casual gig-based nature of yoga teaching makes it hard to gather hard data about the profession, and estimates of its average annual salary range from $45,000 to roughly $30,000 or less a year. A yoga teacher's income may vary widely from month to month as practitioners go on vacation or decide to stay home due to inclement weather. And on top of all of that, a flood of new teachers has made the competition for teaching slots more intense than ever. He says that in 2005, so that's 10 years ago already, the North American Studio Alliance estimated that there were 70,000 yoga teachers in North America. And since then, yoga practice has only grown in popularity, and the number of teacher training programs has risen as a result. So that's according to Ned.
Well, I don't know about Ned. I mean, he doesn't know me. And I mean, I'm going to make $45,000 from like one rich client who's going to just love my yoga stuff.
Well, I mean, you don't have to just listen to Ned. The Bureau of Labor Statistics says that the average yoga teacher makes $31,720 per year, which is roughly $1,525 per hour. It's not really that much more than minimum wage in a lot of places. And keep in mind that you're not teaching from 9 to 5. You're, you know, maybe teaching one to two classes a day. So
yeah, because I need all that time to sing my kirtans and to, like, you know, like
lots of prep
Ganesha.
Work. Okay. Yeah, lots of prep work, but you're not getting paid for that prep work, Michael. So, well, there are a lot of great reasons to teach yoga. I don't necessarily think going into it for the money is the best idea. Mm. But what are some of these other reasons you might be a yoga teacher if you can't, you know, become a bajillionaire? Why might people want to teach yoga or take a yoga teacher training, more likely? Well, the obvious reason is you want to teach yoga. You take a yoga teacher training, so you want to teach. You know, maybe you love practicing yoga. It's really changed your life. It's something you really enjoy, and you want to share this thing that you love with other people. That's a big reason. Another reason might be that you're already teaching and you want to expand your knowledge and your practice, or you might even be required to take a training by your employer. That was one of the reasons for me why I initially took my first 200-hour training. Back when I started teaching 10 years ago, it was a little bit easier, I think, than it is now to not be certified. And I wasn't initially. And I was teaching at a studio, and the studio owner said, hey, you know, I would really like it if you got a 200-hour training. So that was kind of an impetus for me to do that. And I think that's the case with many people. You also might want to offer yoga to underserved populations. And in order to do that, you want to learn teaching methodology and how you can actually best present this information first. And there are a lot of people who take teacher trainings without any intention to teach. You know, maybe they just want to expand their practice. Not everybody wants to teach. And actually, our dear friend, Jean Heileman.
Jean Heileman.
Yeah. Hi, Jean. Hope you're listening. She wrote a great article for Yoga Anonymous about why taking a teacher training could be the best thing you do for yourself ever. And in her article, she presents lots of reasons beyond just wanting to teach yoga, why a teacher training might be really great. And she kind of sums it all up by saying, it might be called a yoga teacher training, but really, it's a course in learning how to work with your body and mind for the rest of your life. You learn so much, anatomy, physiology, pranayama, meditation, asana, etc. So that's a big reason why people take teacher trainings too.
Love Jean Heileman. Yeah, yoga chitta vritti nirodha, working with those vrittis of the chitta.
Yeah, you will do that in a teacher training. Definitely, it is an experience. And, you know, some places recognize that not everybody maybe wants to be a teacher, and these teacher trainings can be expensive. The average teacher training is about $2,500 to $4,000. That's U.S. dollars. And they can be, depending on if they're a little more extensive or if there's a lot of travel involved, they can be, you know, upwards of $20,000 for a teacher training. So that is a lot to spend if you don't plan on teaching, which is why some studios and some schools offer immersions instead, where you do all the stuff where you might do in a teacher training, asana practice-wise, you learn the philosophy, but when it comes to the actual teaching methodology, you don't participate in that. And sometimes that's a little bit better choice for those who know they don't want to teach. So maybe something to consider.
Mm-hmm.
So, Michael, you've done a teacher training or two, haven't you?
I've done a couple of teacher trainings, yeah.
Yeah, tell me about what made you take teacher training, besides the vast fortune that you planned on amassing.
Yeah, the vast fortune, that's only a more of a recent development. Mm-hmm. But I got into yoga primarily for the sort of spiritual benefits, and I wanted, you know, answers to the deep questions of life, and was lucky enough to stumble into my first yoga experience was the classical tradition of yoga. So I did a teacher training through the Himalayan Institute and as a video guy at Omega and at Yoga International, I've been exposed to a lot of yoga. I studied with Yoga Rupa Raj Stryker, did some of his modules and Yogi Amrita Sai on Yoga Nidra. I've been very blessed to see so many different types of styles of yoga and have a lot of gratitude.
Great. So not only have you taken a couple teacher trainings, but you've actually observed quite a few as well.
Yeah, I've observed, I've taken, I mean, hours here that I just completed last summer, I did it as a retreat, and I wanted to look at it as a retreat to really get into my process and my pranamaya kosha and all that. But what about you, Kat? I mean, have you done some yoga teacher trainings?
Yeah, I've actually done a few. I did, initially, as I mentioned, I started teaching before I was certified. And then I've been teaching maybe about 3-4 years. And I did my first 200-hour teacher training. It took me a while to decide on one until I met actually my teacher, Karina Mirsky, who is on faculty here at the Himalayan Institute, and did a 200-hour training with her, loved it, moved out here, did a 500-hour training with the Himalayan Institute, did a lot of Anusara training on the East and West Coast during that time, did about a 200-hour equivalent training with them, 200-hour vinyasa training, assisted in a 200-hour alignment-based training. So I've kind of I've had the opportunity to observe and participate in quite a few. So, yeah. Definitely.
Certainly shows in your classes, Kat. You're so accomplished.
Thank you. That's kind of you to say. So I mentioned that it was kind of difficult for me to choose a teacher training in the beginning. And let's talk about that, because I don't think I'm alone in that. I think for a lot of people, you know, they might want to expand their teaching, but they're not quite sure how to go about it, how to find the right training for them. So for some people, you know, they might have a studio or a teacher or a style that they're really connected to. And it might be just like, okay, I love Ashtanga, so I know that I want to take a teacher training that's rooted in Ashtanga, and I probably want to take it with this teacher that I take class with every day of the week at 6 a.m. So great, you know, that's wonderful if you have that. But not everybody does. And you might think then, well, it doesn't really matter who I do my training with. I just want to have the piece of paper, 200 hours, send it into Yoga Lens, and then I'm good. But as you continue with the training, you might realize that it matters a little more than you thought. Like if you really want to teach gentle yoga, taking a training that's all based around hot vinyasa might not be the best choice for you. So I would recommend taking at least a few classes with the teachers first, you know, talking to them, getting to know them, asking about the training, and seeing if you can find one that really resonates with you and what you want to teach.
Mm-hmm.
There's a really great article we'll leave in our show notes here. It's from Teach Asana. And this particular article gives some examples of some other questions that you might want to ask yourself, including that question about money.
Money.
So, money, yeah. So not only is yoga not really a great get-rich-quick scheme, but taking teacher trainings can cost, as we mentioned, a good amount of money. And again, you want to be really clear about that before you get into a training. You want to make sure that you can afford it. And if there's some questions about that, you know, talk to your teacher trainer. See if they offer a payment plan. See how much a training's price relates to other trainings that you might be looking at as well, and see what's doable for you. And do keep in mind, too, that if you don't pay for your teacher training, you're probably not going to get that certificate. And also, you know, that your teacher has to pay their bills, too. So you want to make sure that you're being really honest with what's actually available to you.
Kat, I feel like you're naysaying me. I just want to, like, teach yoga, and I just want to make lots of money. And, like, if I just open my heart, won't the shakti and the dakinis just like fill my purses with money, and like I can charge it on my credit card and I'll just make it back?
I mean, possibly, but that might not keep American Express away from knocking at your door, you know? So I would just be really clear.
I'll think about that.
Keep your intentions clear with that. So the other question you might want to ask is this particular teacher training affiliated with Yoga Alliance, meaning are they a registered yoga school? That may or may not be important to you, but if you do want to register with Yoga Alliance, and we'll talk about this a little bit more later, but if you do want to register as a registered yoga teacher, RYT, then you have to do your training through a registered yoga school. So if that's something that's important to you, make sure that you find out ahead of time.
So is there a way for me to find that out? Like if I'm studying with some fellow with a 3-foot-long beard and a nice turban?
You used to have a 3-foot-long beard.
I did used to have a 3-foot-long beard. But like, how do I know if this fellow with his name Das at the end is actually affiliated with?
Well, you could go to his website, your teacher's website, and you could check and see if there's that little RYS logo. It'll be a little circle, and it'll say RYS 200, RYS 300, or maybe RYS 500. And again, we'll talk about what that means a little later. But if you see that Yoga Alliance logo, then you know it's a registered school.
Oh, okay.
And again, there are lots of great schools and great teachers that choose not to register with Yoga Alliance. But if that is something that's important to you, then you want to be clear about that from the get-go. Another question that you might want to ask is, are there any other requirements for this training? And this is a good one brought up in that Teach Asana article that we mentioned. Like, are there going to be dietary requirements? You know, are you going to be expected to adopt a vegetarian diet for the duration of the training? Are you going to have to give up caffeine, alcohol, cigarettes, things like that? Are you going to have to do a juice cleanse? Now, Michael, you know how I feel about juice cleanses. Not a fan of juice cleanses. So if I saw that was a requirement for a teacher training, that would probably not be the training for me. If you like juice cleanses, if you're open to it, hey, maybe that's the training for you. But just make sure you know about those requirements ahead of time.
Well, Kat, I'm really into juice colonics. Yeah, it's a brand new thing, and it's a red wine and chocolate cleanse.
Okay, that's not a juice, but
okay. Well, that's the cleanse part. Then you have the juice colonic, and like Kat, it changed my life. You're definitely gonna want to try this cleanse colonic duo.
I am not going to be trying that cleanse colonic duo.
Okay.
Yeah, not gonna do that teacher training.
Oh, free your mind, Kat, and the rest will follow.
The other thing you might want to look into is talking to graduates of the program. Ask them, you know, what did you think of this training? Did you feel you were prepared to teach afterward? Did you feel like you were missing anything? Would you recommend it? You know, get a little bit of feedback from those participants, and that will serve you well. So you'll see a lot of these numbers attached to teacher trainings, you know, 200 hour, 300 hour, 500 hour. And you might be asking, like, what do these all mean? Like, if I do a 500 hour training, is that in addition to a 200 hour training? Is it, you know, 300 hours plus? Is it another 500? Like, what's going on with that? So let's break that down a little bit. So a lot of these designations have to do with Yoga Alliance. But even aside from that, the basic number you'll usually see for a teacher training that you're, you know, initially going to do is probably 200 hours. Like most studios that offer teacher trainings, at least from what I've seen, they have 200-hour teacher trainings. And again, if they're affiliated with Yoga Alliance, you'll see either 200, 300, or 500. If they're not, you might see perhaps like a 100-hour teacher training, a 225 hours I've seen, 400. And that just really tells you how many instructional hours that you're going to get. There are also weekend teacher trainings, and these, to be very clear, are not certifications. You can take a weekend training through perhaps, and I mean, YogaFit. I actually did a lot of training with YogaFit before I did my first 200-hour training, and from what I understand, they have 200-hour, 500-hour programs, but they also have like these weekend trainings that are a part of that, or that simply you might take if you were, say, a fitness instructor or a personal trainer or maybe a dance teacher, and you just want to get some continuing education and learn a little bit more about yoga to offer your clients. And that might be like a two-day training here, three-day training there. But unless you go through their full 200-hour tract, that's not really it's not really the same as doing a, you know, a 200-hour, obviously, someplace else.
Gotcha.
There are also fitness-based trainings like PIYO, which is a Pilates-yoga hybrid. I think that's a weekend training. Les Mills Body Flow, which I think is Pilates-yoga and Tai Chi. And those are kind of like more gym-based trainings. Probably you wouldn't teach at a studio if you did those, but you might teach at, you know, your local YMCA or your local gym or fitness center. And again, that's not a certification, but it's just kind of a little bit of an intro to yoga. So yeah, let's talk about Yoga Alliance.
Yoga Alliance.
So Yoga Alliance can be pretty confusing to yoga teachers sometimes when it comes to registering, everything like that. What do you know about Yoga Alliance?
You know, Kat, I don't know a lot. I'm a little overwhelmed with those articles that you sent me to read. I mean, all I knew about Yoga Alliance is that it was yoga and the alliance. And who doesn't want to be part of the Rebel Alliance
Rebel
of yoga?
Yeah,
I want to be like freaking Obi-Wan with my lightsaber that's a you know, like my spine and like be part of Yoga Alliance. That's what I want to do.
You should trademark that class. Probably already is, but.
Spinal lightsabering?
Yep, spinal lightsabering.
Okay.
So yeah, what else do you know about Yoga Alliance?
So of course, Kat, since I want to make all this money, I find that a lot
Still
of yoga
that,
studios,
huh?
studios want me to be certified with Yoga Alliance. So it's very important to me to get certified with Yoga Alliance.
Well, first of all, and this is a common misconception, Yoga Alliance doesn't actually certify anybody. Did you know that? Well, you didn't because you... Yeah. Yoga Alliance is, it's not a certification. Rather, it is, you get registered with Yoga Alliance. And this is according to their website. So Yoga Alliance is a voluntary registry of yoga teachers who have graduated from registered Yoga Alliance schools. It's an association that promotes standards for training and practice. And they began in 1999. Wow, I was a freshman in high school in 1999. That seems like a long time ago. They've been around for a bit. They began in 1999, and they have undergone a lot of changes recently. So this is what their website says. A yoga teacher who registers with Yoga Alliance Registry earns the title of Registered Yoga Teacher, or RYT, and may publish his or her online profile in our directory. The teacher registry is not a certification program. It is a listing of teachers who meet our minimum requirements for teaching experience and who've completed their trainings at a registered yoga school. Also, and this is sometimes a bone of contention for some, they say that they do not accept RYT applications from teachers who've completed their training with a non-registered school. And there are currently no alternate or grandparenting options. Remember, that actually used to be an option a while back. When I was doing my first training, everybody was saying, if you want to get grandfathered in, you know, better do it quick because it's going to go away soon. And it wasn't really an option for me, so I didn't pay much attention, but it's no longer an option. And they say that you must complete your training at a registered yoga school, or RYS, 200 or 500 in order to be eligible to register with Yoga Alliance, and that you may upgrade your existing RYT credential or add a specialty designation like prenatal or children's yoga, which they offer those designations as well. You can verify if your school is currently registered by searching for them on our directory.
So wait a second. Like if I go to, I mean, you know, I'm quite a bit older than you, Kat, and if I like found myself in Pune, India.
I think it's pronounced Pune, maybe.
Pune, or
we should check on that. Though.
Or Rishikesh,
yeah.
You know, the land of the rishis, studying at the feet of some sage. I don't know if that fellow has any kind of RYT T after his name, but that's not going to matter for anything?
Well, it might not. You know, it just depends on if you want to register with Yoga Alliance or not. And certainly many great teachers don't. You certainly don't have to. There are a lot of reasons why people might choose not to be affiliated with them. But yeah, if your school is not a registered yoga school, then you can't register as an RYT.
Got it.
So those are the letters that you'll typically, you know, like see in front of a teacher's name, like RYT 200, RYT 500. You might also see ERYT. And ERYT stands for Experienced Registered Yoga Teacher. And that means that in addition to the training that you've done, you've also taught for a specific period of time and you've accumulated a specific number of hours teaching. So those designations are ERYT 200, and an ERYT 200 is a teacher with at least 2 years of teaching experience following the completion of training with an RYS 200, and they have to have taught at least 1,000 hours of yoga since that time. There is an ERYT 200, RYT 500, that's actually what I'm at now, I think, where you've completed a 500-hour teacher training or 500 hours of teacher training, and then also you have that 1,000 hours of yoga that you've taught since that time and at least 2 years of teaching experience. And then finally, we have the ERYT 500, who is someone who has completed the 500 hours of training with either an RYS 200 and 300, which we'll talk about later, or an RYS 500. They have at least 4 years of teaching experience and have taught at least 2,000 hours of yoga since the completion of that training. So those are those designations. And the reason why that little E is important is if you're an ERYT, that means that you can teach other teachers in a registered yoga school. You can lead a teacher training, or you can teach classes within a teacher training, or you can offer CEUs. I know every year there comes that time where I need to renew my Yoga Alliance registration. And I think, oh, do I really want to do it? Do I really want to pay this, you know, $50, $60, whatever it is? Don't I maybe just want to buy some nice new boots instead? Like, none of the places where I teach really care if I'm registered. But then I remember, oh, yeah, I kind of want to teach in teacher trainings. I kind of want to teach CEUs. Well, okay, I'm going to renew. And I think it's that way for a lot of teachers as well.
I just can't wait to be king. I want to be an ERYT so I can teach my modules on unicorn riding.
I don't actually know if that would fit in with Yoga Alliance's standards. I mean, maybe you could do that as like an additional supplemental training. I would kind of want to take that unicorn riding training.
You're grandfathered in.
Thank you. So how does a school get to be a registered yoga school? Well, you have to submit your teacher training curriculum to Yoga Alliance, and your curriculum has to meet their standards. That means you have to, depending on the trainings that you're offering, you have to offer a certain amount of instructional hours in specific categories. Those categories from their website are techniques, training, and practice, teaching methodology, anatomy and physiology, yoga philosophy, and practicum. And if you're offering a teacher training, if you're a registered yoga school, a registered children's yoga school, or a registered prenatal yoga school, you also have to offer some additional training hours in general background in that specialty area. So all of those, that in detail is available on their website. That's just kind of like a brief overview. So you have to submit your curriculum and it has to follow those standards. Now, a registered yoga school can be a registered yoga school 200, registered yoga school 300, or registered yoga school 500. So again, all these letters, all these numbers, what do they mean?
This is just confusing.
No.
There's so many numbers here. How are we going to sort this all out?
Well, so if you're registered yoga school 200, that means that you offer a 200-hour teacher training that is in line with Yoga Alliance's standards. So pretty straightforward. You could also be a registered yoga school 300, which means that in addition to that 200-hour training, you offer a more advanced 300-hour training that students can take after they finish the 200-hour. You could also let students, I think, in this option, who have done their 200-hour training elsewhere, come in and take this additional 300 hours with you. And then once they have all of that, then they can be an RYT 500. So it just kind of breaks it up a little bit. If you're an RYS 500, that means that you offer one program, one 500-hour program that goes all the way through. So instead of, okay, this is our 200-hour, you can stop, you can go on, maybe take the 300-hour if you've completed a 200-hour. This is like we're going from start to finish, and at the end, you'll have your 500 hours.
This is like one program to rule them all.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
So once you've finished, you'll have your 500-hour RYT if you choose to register with Yoga Alliance with both of those options. And again, there's also registered prenatal yoga school, or you could be a registered children's yoga school if you if you're in line with those standards and you submit your curriculum. In addition to Yoga Alliance, believe it or not, some places have state regulations for yoga schools.
State regulations too?
Yeah, I'm from Michigan. Did you know that?
I knew that you were from Michigan, yeah.
Yeah, you did. And if our listener sometimes hears me get into the, you know, after every word, that's kind of a Michigan thing.
Are you from the UP
yeah.
or the LP?
Oh, I'm from the LP.
Oh, yeah, where on the mitten?
You guys can't see, but it's kind of right there, like under the thumb a little bit on the mitten.
Oh, that's like the medium rare.
Yeah,
I'm from
West Michigan.
West Michigan.
Yes.
Detroit what?
Well, not quite, but close.
Oh, okay. That's Eastern Michigan.
Yeah. So in Michigan, there's actually the regulation that a yoga teacher training school must be licensed and registered with the state of Michigan's proprietary school unit. And as far as I know, Michigan is kind of alone in that right now. I could be wrong. I know there was some legislation that was being looked at in New York and Vermont, but I believe that yoga schools were ruled exempt from that. But basically, my point is, if you want to become a registered yoga school, or if you just even want to offer a teacher training outside of Yoga Alliance, you might want to look into your state regulations and make sure that everything's on the up and up with that.
Michigan leading the charge. You all are fierce up there. You're like Wolverines.
Or Spartans.
Also fierce.
Mm-hmm. And continuing education. So kind of looking back to Yoga Alliance, you are required, if you're a registered yoga teacher, to do a certain amount of continuing education. It's really not that much. In fact, some would argue that it's just plain not enough. But you're required within 3 years, every 3 years, starting from the initial date you registered, you're required to have 45 hours of teaching and 30 additional hours of yoga training. And 10 of those training hours have to be contact hours, which means they have to be like in person. And no more than 20 of them can be non-contact hours, which means like maybe some online training and things like that. But again, even if you're not registered with Yoga Alliance, that's just a good idea, I think. You know, expand your knowledge a little bit. Get some additional training.
Yeah, CEUs are like creative earning units, right? I mean,
continuing education officially, but I like where you're going with that.
Oh, okay.
So Yoga Alliance does require that, but it's a good idea regardless. It's kind of an overview of Yoga Alliance overall. So it's a registration. It is not a certifying body. It's also not a labor union.
So are you – okay, wait a second. I'm confused now because I thought that Yoga Alliance was going to, you know, take care of me. They were going to send a special
truck. Give you
truck.
A gold watch when you retire.
You know, give me a gold watch. If I, like, went into samadhi during my trikonasana, like, are they going to send people to kind of calm me down and give me, like, a sweet, you know, ghee to, like
– I wouldn't count on it. I wouldn't count on it. No. Maybe they could recommend somebody, but wouldn't count on that. So why would a yoga teacher want to register for Yoga Alliance? Well, go to their website. They have a list of a whole bunch of benefits. If you go to member perks, you can read about those. Just some discounts and things like that, I believe. And they also, fairly recently, they helped to defend the case Sedlock versus Baird in Encinitas, California, where people wanted to shut down a school yoga program, like yoga for children. And they didn't. And Yoga Alliance apparently played a role in the fact that that program still exists today.
So it sounds like Yoga Alliance actually is a force of good in the world.
Yeah, I would say so, certainly. They also created a petition against Yoga Glow to withdraw its patent. Did you hear about that whole Yoga Glow patent thing?
Here at Yoga International, I may have heard or may not have heard anything about that.
Yes, so if you go to yogainternational.com and you type Yoga Glow in the search bar, you can definitely read all about that. But Yoga Glow did eventually withdraw their patent, and Yoga Alliance, they put out a petition like in the beginning, and a lot of people signed the petition. Like huge number of people, and they definitely were active in speaking out against that. So that's a way that they kind of spoke up for the community as well. But there are still some people who say, you know, Yoga Alliance is not really necessary. Like, I don't really care if I'm a registered yoga teacher or not. I just care that I can teach yoga. And there are certainly a lot of studios that would feel the same. And one criticism that they often received is just lack of oversight. That, you know, these standards are kind of loosey-goosey. There's not really a way that we can verify that a teacher is really competent just based on these standards.
So you're telling me that, like, my CEU on, like, Colonic Red Wine
well,
is...
Well, again...
That's a Maria Bamford. Shout out.
Again, we like Maria Bamford. Maybe we can get her on the show. But then again, you know, that probably wouldn't be counted as an approved CEU. But you know, there's the argument kind of goes both ways. Well, on the one hand, it's like, well, we want yoga lines to have more oversight. I want to know that my teacher training is actually teaching me what I need to know. But then on the other hand, Yoga Alliance says, you know, we don't want to be the yoga police either. So there does have to be a balance there. Jay Brown.
Jay Brown Woot.
We referenced Jay Brown on last week's podcast, too. We like Jay Brown. He wrote an article called Yoga Alliance Approved My Ass in 2011, and we will link to that in the show notes. So it's a little dated, but I think some of these criticisms are still valid. So in this article, he says, referring to the Yoga Alliance guidelines as standards is quite a stretch. For example, being registered at the 200-hour level is said to have 20 hours of yoga philosophy. Generally, this entails a cursory reading of Patanjali's Yoga Sutra and a written test, kind of like reading the chapter and answering the summary questions in my ninth grade social studies class. And then he goes on to talk about how standards implies greater quality, not a specific quantity of time spent on who knows what. If we want to encourage more qualified yoga teachers, let's start talking about competencies instead of hours. And more importantly, let's be straightforward with the public so they can make informed choices. So that is kind of a good point. Like, you know, you have these, and I'm not sure if 20 hours of philosophy is exactly what it is anymore. That might have changed since 2011. But you have, okay, you have to have this much anatomy for these many hours, this much philosophy for these many hours. But you don't really get to, you know, there's no way to really test the quality of that unless somebody comes in and sits in the back and takes notes.
Sure. I mean, I've been here at the Himalayan Institute getting like the highest quality philosophical instruction on yoga probably the planet, and seriously for 3 years. I don't even think I've scratched the surface of this vast. I mean, you said that this article was dated. I mean, yoga is 6,000 years old. You want to talk about dated. And it's like, I don't even know half the time what, you know, the Yoga Sutra is saying.
You know, in a more recent article, too, this is from Yoga Alliance is Ruining Yoga is the name of the article, and it's by James Brown.
The who big
is
payback, huh?
Well, not Jay Brown and also not, you know, the musician at all. Different person from both.
Yoga!
And this is over at American Yoga School. And this is from 2014, talking about, you know, that same criticism with the lack of standardization. And he says that instead of telling trainings what should be taught, Yoga Alliance simply requires that a certain number of hours be spent covering each of five areas of study, with no specificity given on how to fill those hours. What we were talking about. As listed on their website, registered 200-hour trainings, the level that 85% of their registered yoga teachers hold, must include 100 hours of practice, 25 hours of teaching methodology, 20 hours of anatomy, 30 hours of philosophy. Okay, so it's 30 hours now, so that has increased a bit, and ethics, and 10 hours of practice teaching. But the content of each area of study is left up to the school. And again, that can be a little tricky because, again, we don't really want Yoga Alliance to be the yoga police. But yeah, like you were saying, you know, you don't know what these teachers are teaching about the Yoga Sutra. As you said, you know, you and I have both been really fortunate to attend a lot of lectures on the Yoga Sutra with great teachers. But I feel like I'm just scratching the surface, too. And, you know, I've taught Yoga Sutra in teacher trainings, and usually what I feel like I'm able to offer is a little bit of history and background. Well, the Yoga Sutras were codified by Patanjali in the early part of the Common Era. There's 196, sometimes 195. These are some notable ones you might want to remember. And that's really what is absorbed, I think, in most 200-hour trainings. I do think, though, you know, kind of look at the other side of things. If you're a yoga teacher here in the U.S., what are you probably teaching? Probably you have a 90-minute class where you do practice, right? Asana, meditation, pranayama. If you graduate from a 200-hour program, that's, you know, maybe what you're going to be going into, 60 minutes to 90 minutes. And maybe somebody asks you about the Yoga Sutra, and if you can say, hey, the Yoga Sutra contains 195, sometimes 196 aphorisms codified by the sage Patanjali, and, you know, and so on and so on. Here is a commentary and translation I recommend. Why don't you check it out? Here is a teacher who knows more than me that I recommend studying with. Why don't you check it out? I kind of think that's fine. Like, at the 200-hour level, do you really need to know much more than that?
I mean, you know, I think you're right. I think where we're at right now in this culture with yoga is its identity is changing. It's discovering itself. To me, the Yoga Sutra is like the gene of the organism, and the yoga asana class is sort of like the phenotype or the body. So, you know, this is like a fine relationship that you have over time and you're committed to with this book, for instance, and it changes and you have to go back to it at different times in your life. But on your day-to-day, you're maybe just practicing in your body. So I don't know if you can mandate like 20 hours or 30 hours you're going to like learn this thing, because it changes over time.
Absolutely. And so in Yoke Alliance, they did address this criticism of the lack of standardization in 2013. And what they did was they implemented what they call a social credential system. This requires that students review their school when they register. So you're like, okay, I finished my teacher training, going to log on to Yoke Alliance, going to register. And then I guess it asks you to review your school. I've kind of looked at some of those with some trainings that I've participated in and taught in. And it's kind of like Yelp, really. Like you log in, you see the stars, you see the review. And the idea is there's kind of like a community, for lack of a better word, policing in that way. Like if you're thinking of doing a training and you see it has like 10 one-star reviews, well, you might take pause and, you know, at least read those reviews.
That's good to know, because I mean, like Yelp is always very helpful in a big city. If I want to go get some like dumplings somewhere, I can just kind of see what they, you know, like got rated on Yelp. And it's kind of good to know about teacher trainings.
Which ones have the best dumplings?
The best dumplings. Teacher trainings.
But still, for some teachers, like James Brown over at American Yoga School, that's still not enough, and you know, offers some good counterpoints in that same article, which we will again link to in the show notes. Another criticism that I often hear about Yoga Alliance is that there's just not enough anatomy.
Oh my God, anatomy, Kat. You know how I feel about anatomy.
You feel about anatomy how I feel about juice cleanses.
I mean, I know anatomy is important. I'm not saying it's not, but I sometimes think that we do some kind of a, I don't know, anatomical bypass when I kind of think that in yoga we're trying to deeply feel our body and get deeply into our energy body and listen to the voice that is within. And knowing another name for a part of the body to me is not interesting. But in school, I studied physiology. I wasn't particularly interested in anatomy at that time either. I wanted to know processes, not so much the...
Well, that's important to learn too.
Yeah, I mean, it's
But I think you make a valid point. Like, people have different preferred learning styles, different ways that they like to take in information. And you'll have some students who, you know, don't care about the anatomy. And when you talk about it, they're like, oh, you know, just tune out. But then you do have other students that will respond better if you respond to them using anatomical language. And there are, like, you know, certain safety concerns where I think it's beneficial for me as a teacher to know, okay, I don't want somebody's knee to drop in Virabhadrasana 2, but why? Is it just because it doesn't look pretty? Well, no. Like anatomically, I know that that's not good for the ligaments of the knee. And so to have that knowledge in anatomical language, I think is really valuable, maybe for some more than others. And then another criticism that I've heard, of course, is that teachers must have graduated from an RYS, Registered Yoga School, to lead a Yoga Alliance affiliated teacher training, which means you could be an awesome teacher. You could have tons of training, be really skillful, lots of experience, and able to lead a stellar teacher training. But if you yourself did not graduate from a registered yoga school, you're not able to offer that option to your students. So your students who study with you, unless you choose to do more teacher training, they can't register with Yoga Alliance. And a lot of teachers say, hey, that's not fair. I've been teaching for 40 years. I have all this experience. I don't want to go back and do another 200-hour teacher training. That's a lot of money and a waste of my time. I still feel like my students should be able to register if they want to. And currently they can't, and so some people are upset about that.
So what I'm hearing is that I can offer my unicorn riding module in my teacher training. I just can't offer that for Yoga Alliance
certification. Yes, and what I want to know, will there be lightsabers in the unicorn riding module?
That's module two, Kat.
Module two?
Don't steal my thunder.
But you said I could be grandfathered in.
Well,
so
you're grandfathered
I'm expecting
in. You're totally grandfathered in. Because I've known, you're an amateur unicorn rider, lightsaber user.
Yes, that is true. Let's
Can we say lightsaber? Does George Lucas own that? I don't know.
I think we're good.
Okay.
So there's even, believe it or not, some religious objections. Last week we talked about, you know, this myth that yoga is a religion, and, you know, it's not, I would say. But there are schools, you know, Christian yoga schools we talked about last week, where I saw one example where a school said, hey, you know, for this 30 hours of philosophy, we want to teach Christian philosophy. We want to teach from the Bible. We don't want to use the Bhagavad Gita and the Yoga Sutra. And we feel like, you know, we can't do that anymore with Yoga Alliance's new standards. So we're going to choose to disassociate. And that kind of got me thinking, you know, like, well, you do go to pretty much any 200-hour teacher training, and you have the Yoga Sutra and the Bhagavad Gita, which are great texts, but it is kind of like, why those two texts? Like, there's lots of other great literature in the yoga tradition. What if I want to do my teacher training and focus more on the Hatha Yoga Pradipika or on the Pratyabhijna Hridayam? You know, what if I want to focus more on some of these other texts, but I can't?
I have never even heard of the Pratyabhijna Hridayam.
Oh, it's a lovely text. We have actually a really nice commentary, and I think it's verse 4 from Bill Mahoney, a great scholar and teacher in yogainternational.com. So if you want to learn more about that, there's a little history of the text. But that aside, like, what if I want to teach from some of these other texts?
Mm. That's a great question. You know, we brought it up last week about the religious/spiritual aspects of yoga. And I mean, I personally think that yoga still is kind of suffering a little bit of an identity crisis in this culture. I mean, there are some classical ideas of what yoga is, which involve these philosophical/spiritual texts. And there are some modern practices of yoga that maybe don't involve any of those texts, but it's not, you know, it's not spinning. Yoga's not spinning. Mm-hmm. It's not, you know, it's not Zumba.
Although you can take yoga and spinning.
That's great. You know, I mean, do we go to yoga because it's a workout? Do we go to yoga because, you know,
some
it's like a
roast? Some people do.
I mean, some people do, and I mean, that's not a problem. My point is that everybody should theoretically get a place at the table here in our republic,
yeah.
And if there is prayer yoga or some kind of Christian telling of yoga, I mean, like, I'm not going to say that it's not yoga. It's maybe not in alignment with the classical sense of what yoga is, but, well, they're here and they're doing, and there are brothers
yeah.
and sisters. So, like, how do we accommodate people to get the best healing and the greatest spiritual expansion that they can get?
Well, and I think that's kind of the line that a registering body like Yoga Alliance has to straddle. You know, it's on the one hand, we do want to offer people the freedom to teach, you know, what makes their training unique, so not the yoga police. But then on the other line, well, how do we know that people are actually learning to be competent yoga teachers? And it is a bit of a tricky equation, I think.
Mm.
But aside from Yoga Alliance, you can get a style-specific certification. This is where certification might actually come in, you know, in the style of yoga that you study. So that's when you'll probably hear somebody say, I am certified. If you could be a certified Anusara teacher, you could be a certified Para yoga teacher, certified Jivamukti teacher, a Baptiste yoga teacher. And many of those schools, I'm not sure about Jivamukti, actually, I would have to double check on that, but many of those schools are also affiliated with Yoga Alliance, and that you can take, say, for example, I did a lot of my training. I'm not currently at all affiliated with Anusara, as many teachers no longer are, but I did a lot of my initial training with them. And at that time, I did what would have been the equivalent of a 200-hour training. So had I not already been registered with Yoga Alliance, I could have registered with Yoga Alliance. But then beyond that, I registered as an Anusara-inspired teacher, which was a designation that was just a little below certified. Had I kept going, I could have become Anusara-certified and at the same time been registered with Yoga Alliance. So that's where the certification language kind of comes in.
So I'm getting a little clearer on this. So again, Yoga Alliance is about registry, and these different yoga styles and or brands are certifications. You don't certify with Yoga Alliance, you register, but you don't register with, let's say, Jivamukti or Baptiste, you certify.
Yeah, and I'm not 100% clear, but I think that there are some schools out there too where you might still not certify with use a certify language. Like, you could take, for instance, a training in Ashtanga yoga and, you know, study a lot of Ashtanga yoga, but I think that there's like a lot more that certification entails, or like with Iyengar, like you only. Not a lot of people get to use that language, you know,
gotcha,
and say that
yeah.
they're certified in
sure,
styles
sure.
like those. Yeah, so some other things that you might want to consider aside from, you know, what do you need aside from a teacher training certificate?
I mean, like, one of the things that I really want beside the teacher training certificate is like a long do list of how you want to spend your money on yoga pants, or if you want to travel overseas or live in a treehouse.
Well, back it up a little bit. Before you have your oodles wads of cash there, you might actually need to get a job teaching. Mm. Yeah.
You mean the job is not going to come to me?
No, you do have to put forth a little bit of effort. And here's what typically needs to happen. You typically need some experience, which can seem like a catch-22. It's like, I want to teach yoga. Well, how much experience do you have? Well, none. Well, you can't teach unless you've got more experience, but you need experience before you can teach. You know, it's a little tricky, but there are ways that you can get experience. One of them is simply, you know, teach for your family and friends. teach at your office or place of employment or your school, like, you know, during lunch or after work. See if you can get some people to come in. Probably not going to get paid for that, but it's a great way to gain, you know, experience. You also could volunteer. You know, look at where might they need a little bit of yoga. I know people that have volunteered to teach at public schools. Like, my mom was a public school teacher, and they do a lot, and they have really long days. And I know she certainly would have loved if, you know, the end of the day, someone was like, hey, let's do a little yoga, everybody. You could also volunteer to teach at, you know, kids in schools, things like that, nurses. You could volunteer to teach underprivileged populations as well. Lots of stuff there, lots of need there. You can also get on sublists. You could call a place that, you know, like a gym or even a studio, depending on what your training has been, and say, hey, like, I'm interested in teaching. And they might say, okay, great, we'll come put you on the sublist. And you might also try places like your local YMCA or even chain gyms like 24 Hour Fitness, LA Fitness, Crunch Gyms, things like that. From what I've heard, they can be a little bit more open to hiring new teachers, especially those who've done 200-hour certifications, than maybe an actual yoga center or studio might be. So in addition to getting that experience, you might also look into insurance, depending on where you're teaching, depending on your state, you know, if you're an independent contractor versus an employee, or especially if you're teaching out of your home or if you're teaching out of clients' homes, then you really want to look into getting some insurance. And there are a lot of different places where you can do that. Yoga Alliance, if you go to their website, they have some recommendations for their members. Yoga Journal also offers a liability insurance, as does Alternative Balance, Yoga Plus. And from what I understand, they're all about around the same price. I know for me, it was typically around like $200 a year. I think maybe a little less if you're teaching less than that. But look into that. Good thing to know about. CPR, too. You're definitely, most places, before they hire you, are going to want you to be CPR certified. And even if that's not a requirement, it's just a good thing to know.
How long does your CPR qualification last? I mean, I had CPR back in my local CC, and I think I got sick from Recessa Annie.
You're going to want to do that again. And now you would use a mouth guard when you practice with Recessa Annie.
No.
So things have changed. The standards have changed in the past few years, as they often do, which is why if you go through the Red Cross or the American Heart Association, it's going to be every year, every 2 years that you're going to want to get that updated, depending on where you get it through and what the guidelines are. Some teacher trainings might even offer that as a special class for the participants, which is really nice. You might also look into an LLC or a limited liability corporation to do your business as. Certainly not something that's required or necessary or even, you know, wanted by everyone. But definitely it's something that you could look into, especially if you're doing a lot of privates or working as a contractor at a lot of different places.
Especially if you're me, who's going to need a tax shelter for all that sweet cheddar I'm going to be making.
No, Yoga International does not endorse your Swiss bank accounts. Also, there are a lot of things that you don't learn in teacher training. And these are the things that only come from experience. So let's finish off by talking about a few of those. So I think the first one is just that you will need and want more training. So, you know, when I first signed up for a 200-hour teacher training, I was like, wow, 200 hours. You know, I'm going to know so much. That is so much time. I'm going to be just like ready. I'm going to be prepared. And even though I had really, really good 200-hour training, I came out of it and I was like, I need more information, please. Help. I want more knowledge. And that's pretty much across the board what I've heard from other teachers, too, and from trainees that I've worked with and mentored, that the end of your training, you're like, I want to know more. Often it's more about anatomy. Often it's more about hands-on adjustments. So that's where you might think about going into a 500-hour program, or you might think about, you know, just getting some continuing education.
The same was true for me. I mean, when I did my yoga teacher training, they mentioned Ayurveda, and I remember kind of being like, what does that have to do with anything? And then something about a pose, you know, pacifies vata or something like that. And then I took an Ayurvedic yogic specialist training here at the Himalayan Institute and ended up being like about, I don't know, 12 days or like four sessions of 3 days each. And it just really, in my experience, it really was a great complement to the yoga teacher training, because a lot of what the magic of yoga is, actually is related kind of to Ayurveda.
Oh,
and
yeah.
To have a little bit of mastery, just a little bit of mastery over some of those terms and some of those principles, I think was, for me at least, was very,
yeah.
very beneficial.
And like for you, it sounds like Ayurveda was something that really resonated with you and you got that little, ooh, I want to know more about this.
Mm.
And when you have that, I say go with it, you know, embrace it, like get that additional training.
Mm.
The other thing that you quickly realize is, and this one is perhaps for you, Michael,
uh-oh.
That you're not only probably not going to strike it rich as a yoga teacher.
You're always naysaying me. Kat, you're always naysaying.
I know, but hear me out. But it's pretty hard to make a living as a yoga teacher, especially in the beginning. So I would say, you know, don't quit your day job, at least not right away. And teaching, you know, for a lot of reasons, it might not be especially sustainable for everyone, especially in the beginning, especially thinking about, you know, different seasons, how if, as a lot of yoga teachers do, you get paid per student, you know, people might go on vacation at certain times. If you teach in a studio with Groupons, you might have 100 students in class, but you might not be getting paid for those Groupons, you know, so it's not always the most lucrative career choice. However, there are some ways that you can make your teaching more sustainable. You can offer private lessons, which typically you would, of course, be able to charge a little bit more for a private lesson than for a group class. And you can offer workshops. You know, that's a great way to just really offer a lot of what you feel passionate about to a group of people who signed up because they presumably feel equally passionate about it.
I have a lot of workshop ideas, Kat.
Oh, I know. We'll discuss those after the podcast. And you can also teach, you know, if you are an ERYT, if you have a lot of experience, have been teaching for a while, and you have the desire to do so, you could teach teacher trainings. But I would say, at least in the beginning, again, don't quit your day job. For me, I've found that I like to have a day job that is yoga-related. That's really been, like, even when I worked in retail, I'm like, I'm selling yoga pants. When I worked in editorial, I am writing and editing articles about yoga. When I've, you know, worked at a gym as a personal trainer, I would still be able to incorporate a little bit of yoga. Or like for you, you know, you're a very talented videographer, and so you make yoga videos.
Thank you, Kat.
And that's a way to combine those two talents. So you might think about that too. Like, what do I already do? What do I love to do besides yoga? And is there a way that I can kind of mesh these two aspects of myself?
Work smarter, not harder.
Good advice. Marketing is also perhaps more important than you think. And this is one that was always kind of tough for me because I don't like marketing myself. I don't like making up those flyers or working on a website. I felt a little bit self-conscious about it. You know, you go into the coffee shops like, can I put up this flyer, please? And you just sit back and pray that somebody sees it, even though there's 80 other flyers in the coffee shop and one immediately goes up over yours. So if that's not something you're crazy about, you might consider that it might be challenging to just make your living as a yoga teacher. You might want to get on board with some people that, like a team to work with other teachers who are perhaps there's someone there who is more passionate and interested in marketing. Or you might also, you know, just there's nothing wrong with having your other job that you love, doing the other things that you do, and then maybe teaching a couple classes a week on top of that. Maybe teaching at a studio where they take care of the marketing and you don't have to worry about making up flyers and websites. The other piece of advice that I would say is really important is have a support system. And, you know, this could be other people from your teacher training. Have groups of teachers that you can sit around with and talk with about teaching that you can perhaps, I would love to get together with friends, I still do actually, and make up lesson plans. You know, you get a little feedback. You get people to bounce ideas off of. Like, do you really think that your class is going to be warmed up enough for Titi Basana at that point? Like, maybe you should do a little bit more hamstring stretches. And you're like, oh yeah, thanks. Co-teaching, too, is great. Teaching with other teachers, doing workshops with other teachers. I find I'm much less nervous when I have another person that I'm teaching with.
Because, you know, like they say in Buddhism, you know, the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha.
Yeah.
And like a support system to me is one way of sort of saying Sangha. You know, these are people that for no apparent reason you just feel good around. You know, not people who are going to enable your pain body or your own stories, but just people with whom you feel, you know, sort of connected and like you can sort of like process in parallel rather than in sequence. I think it's how you say that.
Yeah, no, that's really important. So listeners, if you have any advice for new yoga teachers or any insights that you've had from your teacher training experience, we would love to hear them. You can send us feedback at yogatalk@yogainternational.com. And we have a couple of letters from listeners that we received that I'm going to read to you right now. So this is from Jenny, and this is about our body image podcast, which Emily and I did a few weeks ago. And she said, I just finished listening to your first podcast. Thank you so much for your honesty. I'm a 58-year-old woman who has been practicing yoga for over 2 years, and I'm taking private lessons to sidestep the whole drive to compete and compare and hurt myself. And just an aside, that is a really good idea too, especially like if you're teaching, just like taking private lessons can make a huge difference in your own practice. You can get these little insights. So great idea, Jenny. And then she goes on to say, I hope the podcasts keep coming. I listen to many podcasts in my car as I drive a lot for work, and I prefer listening to something that lifts my spirits and inspires me. Keep up the good work. Thank you, Jenny. That is very kind of you to say. And this one comes from Cheryl. And Cheryl says, this is again on Emily and my previous podcast on body image. Wow, thank you both so much for doing this. What a great start to what was going to be a I feel a bit yuck and chunky doing my yoga today. I hope to God my students or the world don't notice that I've put on a few pounds. Sigh, kind of day. Oh, Cheryl, I have definitely had those kinds of days.
I love that Cheryl said a bit yuck and that she feels a bit yuck and chunky. Because I had a great meditation instructor one time tell me when I said I had a bad meditation. He said, "Oh, that's awesome. That's great." And he was really complimenting me on my terrible meditation, and like I couldn't understand what he meant. And he went on to say, "Well, actually, meditation kind of magnifies your attention, so you start to notice things that maybe you weren't actually noticing before. They were there, you just weren't noticing them."
Yeah, yeah.
So to say I feel yuck, I feel chunky is actually kind of good, because that means you're alert and aware, and that's actually what we're practicing in sometimes.
Yeah, totally. And then Cheryl goes on to say, blessings to you both. You've inspired a theme for me and my classes. May the campaign continue to grow. Big love and a big yogi squeezy hugs. Huge congrats. A job superbly done. I feel good. And Cheryl, I'm so glad that our podcast helped you feel good, helped you feel better about yourself. Definitely, we all need that reminder that we're all good enough, you know, that our bodies are beautiful, that a yoga body is a body that does yoga. And so glad that that resonated with you. I'm so glad that you're passing on that positive message to your students. So thank you. And then, Michael, do you want to read this last letter we have from Libby?
Yeah, sure. Libby says, hi, Yoga International. Love your site and use it all the time since I became a member. Thanks for a great resource. I have some feedback about the podcast. It would be great to have Yoga Talk on Stitcher, a podcast app for Android and iOS. It makes it really easy to subscribe and listen, better controls, etc., on smartphones. I'm one who plugs in my earbuds and listens to podcasts as I clean the house, etc.
Me too.
More info, blah, 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 Stitcher, FAQ. Thanks for the great work you're doing. Peace to you, Libby.
Yes, thank you, Libby.
Thank you, Libby.
So glad Libby wrote into us, because as soon as she did, I was like, yeah, we should get on Stitcher. And the great news is we did. So you can find Yoga Talk on Stitcher. You can also find us, of course, on iTunes. We would love it if you would subscribe and leave us a review on iTunes. You know, we love to hear your feedback. Especially, we want to know, what topics do you want to talk to us about, or do you want us to talk about in the future? What issues surrounding yoga culture are you most interested in learning about or discussing? And again, if you have any other comments, feedback, suggestions, you can email them to yogatalk@yogainternational.com. And we are going to take you out once more with the householders.
Householders.
Yes.